Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. We're trying to get the guests connected here. We're sorry for any minor inconvenience this may cause you, but what you going to do? This is Steve from Steve's Video Store on Cultside Radio. And yes, I know everything reads and everything your subscription says KSDAD Radio, but I'm too lazy to go and change every one of the links. And if I had to, I'd probably have to shoot myself in the foot. So I hope everybody out there had a good Mother's Day. Sorry. Had a good Mother's Day and all that jazz. This has been an interesting week, to say the least. My old mother had her own eye surgery, but we got that taken care of, and now she can see perfect. And I just hold on. I'm trying to get a hold of the guest. Sorry. This is what you get with live radio, kids. You never know when you're going to jump off a cliff and do that spectacular Bond stunt, or you're going to jump off that cliff and you're going to be Wile E. Coyote hitting the ground with a big splat. And, of course, then, again, with 65 million, Avengers was the number one movie of the day. We're getting there. If you're listening to this on the other one, on any of the things we're subscribed to, iTunes and all that, we're very, very sorry about this. Oh, and there he is. Hold on, everybody. We're getting him in.
Hello?
Hello. Hello, Mike.
Hey, what's happening?
All right. Good. What you missed is I opened it with the rarest song off of the Party Animal soundtrack, pretty much the Holy Grail song, which is Just a Girl by the Cadillacs.
Yeah. Excellent choice. Excellent observation about that being super obscure and hard to track down.
That 1 minute, 10 minute clip that we played, that's about all there is out there.
Yeah. No, I had a similar frustration in trying to track down, because I wanted to build my own party animal soundtrack out of the different parts. And yeah, you can only find a part of that part.
They have the exact bit they use in the movie, and that's it.
Yeah.
So this is Mike McBearden. Well, I'm just going to call him Mike, writer of Teen Movie Hell. Why did you decide to write two books? Well, the first on heavy metal movie horror films, and then one on 80s teen movies.
Well, I always wanted to
Well,
write the
teen
movie
movie
about.
Period, sorry.
Yeah, well, it's 70s and 80s, but the emphasis is definitely on the 80s. I always wanted to write the teen movies book and tried a couple times in the past. It didn't happen. And then in sometime around 2010, the book Destroy All Movies came out, which was the complete history of punk rock in movies. And I was so impressed by it, I said, I have to write the heavy metal answer book to that. So that's how heavy metal movies came to be. And then that did well enough that my publisher said, okay, go ahead, write the teen movies book now.
I have to ask, does Teen Movie have Terror on Tour in it with the amazing metal chant, the end all metal chants?
Well, Heavy Metal Movie certainly does with the clowns, aka the names, yeah.
Yeah. And the chant I'm talking about is something that you'll hear all through the last 20 minutes of the movie. Why'd you make me do it, Phil? Why'd you do it? Why'd you make me do it, Phil? I think it's about half of the dialogue during the climax, isn't it?
I would say at least. I would say that's an excellent estimate, yeah.
But yeah, I love the teen movies book so far. I'm about halfway through it.
Wow, you're reading it
and
in
order? I
want to
applaud you of having the brilliant move of putting that book out today, but making sure to have a buffer episode that answers all of the questions the politically sensitive generation would have about talking about some of these movies.
Yeah, I would say all of these movies, really. Yeah, I couldn't, as a 50-year-old married man, you know, it would be a hell of a thing for me to say, wasn't it great when we had all these naked teenage girl movies to ogle? So I asked a bunch of really brilliant writers who happened to be women to provide their point of view. One of whom is the great Kat Ellinger, who is the publisher of Diabolique magazine over in England. She wrote an intro that puts, you know, basically bad taste and shocking comedy into the proper context of cinema and human history.
Yeah, and I like that you start with the Beach Party movies. That's where I probably would have cut it off too.
Yeah, that's really where they came from, because they're very cartoonish, they're wild, it's about kids bucking the system, living on their own terms, no authorities, and they just sort of added nakedness and sex in the 80s, but kept that same spirit alive.
Yeah, and they added great rock and roll music.
Very much, although the Beach Party movies have some great.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite ones is, what was the one with Stevie Wonder on it? Oh. Hello? Oh, we lost our guest. We'll be back in a second. But yeah, the Beach Party brought in that, and just some of the greatest live footage you're ever going to see, and it really introduced a lot of rock singers too. The lexicon. My favorite, which I'll get out of the way before he comes back, is little Stevie Wonder just shows up, and he was like newly signed. Oh, there he is.
I'm here. Hello.
Hello.
Okay. Yeah, that was weird.
Where I was about was that. Which one has Stevie Wonder at the end of it?
I believe that's Muscle Beach Party with Don Rickles is playing a parody of Vic Tanney, the original gym entrepreneur. And he plays Fingertips Part 2. He's a real little kid now. He's little Stevie Wonder.
Yeah,
but,
he comes up on stage
great.
And
yeah.
starts to play. And you see the audience out there just like, what's going on here? And, and then Stevie Wonder really starts to tear it up. And then the cameraman cuts over, and there's this guy that's supposed to be dancing, and it just shows him that with his jaw open.
Yeah, right. They can't believe this, like, 12-year-old kid is playing the harmonica and singing like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, that Muscle Beach Party really set up the formula, which was women in the least clothes as possible, great rock and roll music, the teen bad guys, and the adult authority who they're bucking at the same time.
Very much, yeah. And the party. It was inviting you to, saying to the teenagers out there, look, there's a party on the screen. You're invited. You just have to buy a ticket.
Yeah, I mean.
And also, you know, a lot of pranks, a lot of dancing, a lot of running wild, a lot of romance, heartbreak. Yeah, the whole formula was there that would then, you know, be replicated in the 80s with everything from, you know, Porky's to the party animal, as we were talking about.
Yeah, and what's funny is how tame the beach party movies really became real freaking quick once the 60s turned.
Yeah. Well, they definitely are sort of like between the, you know, the Eisenhower buttoned up 50s and the psychedelic hippie 60s. So they occupy a unique place in American youth culture history.
Yeah, and they occupy a unique place in drive-in history is that they were the first run movies made for to be distributed brand new at the drive-in rather than go to the hardtop theaters and then put in the drive-in.
Right, and that was the great Samuel Z. Arkoff and James Nicholson at American International Pictures, which is probably the greatest drive-in studio.
Oh, yeah. Like up in Vandenberg, they show... In the spring, they show 80s. In September, they always show the 60s stuff.
Oh, cool.
I thought I loved the Poe films, but then I've seen them on a drive-in screen under the starlight. I loved them.
Yeah, I've not seen them outside. I have seen a bunch of them here at the Music Box in Chicago, and just to even see them, as you say, the hardtop theater, it's just stunning. They're just beautiful, enchanting, spooky, powerful films.
Yeah, there's two films that you left out that I find interesting, and I wanted to ask you why in their 70s films. One was Ode to Billy Joe.
Okay, well, it's not a comedy. The book really just focuses on comedies. But I do have a funny story about that, and it almost made it into the book. I was going to do a sidebar about Robbie Benson, the star of the movie. But in the book, in my real life, I saw Ode to Billy Joe, which was a huge drive-in hit, a blockbuster, based, of course, on Bobby Gentry's song, which is all about the mystery. Why did this kid, Billy Joe McAllister, jump off the Tallahatchie Bridge? And in the movie, it's revealed, spoiler alert, that he's gay and he can't live with it. And so I saw the movie on NBC when I was 12 years old, and there's a scene where Billy Joe steps behind a circus tent at the carnival with the local sawmill owner, which is how he realizes his orientation. And in my head, I remember them having a very graphic love scene. But then when I rewatched the movie a couple of years ago, I found out that there was never a scene like that. I just imagined it in my head.
Well, wouldn't you be ashamed, too, if you realized that the greatest sexual experience of your life was Roscoe P. Coltrane from Dukes of Hazzard?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right, the sawmill operator, yeah. I have to say, yeah, that lends another dimension of complexity to Billy Joe's decision.
Yeah. And the other one was Buster and Billy, which starts out as a sweet comedic film. You've seen it, right?
Yeah. I have, yeah. I can't think of the two stars now, yeah.
Jan Michael Vincent, and I forget the girl's name. But it starts out as this sweet, beautiful, innocent, comedic, like Class of 44 romance between the bad girl and this guy who's a football star.
Right.
And then for whatever, God knows why, they decide to make it into the bleakest, most disturbing damn movie ever in the last reel.
Well, that was the 70s. I mean, have you ever seen Dirty Mary? Oh, it was Pamela Sue Martin was in that movie. But no, Joan Goodfellow played Billy.
Yeah, Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, which is awesome. Cool, fun, southern car movie until the last 3 seconds, and then you're just sitting there.
Yeah. I remember, like, watching that, and I didn't see the theater. I saw it on TV one morning. I jumped out of my chair. I couldn't believe what happened. But the 70s, it was a heavy time.
Yeah, but most of the 70s stuff you cover has to be the Crown stuff, because they were the one putting out these gentle ones.
Yes. They were very much the cheerleader movies, the pom-pom girls, Malibu Beach, Malibu High, everything up to – they put out My Tutor in 1983 even. That's a Crown movie. They spent the
My Tutor, My Chauffeur.
My Chauffeur was
also – I've seen one of the Holy Grails.
Yeah.
It was – late night on this public access channel, my big dish satellite back when we had it.
Yeah.
And at 2 a.m., I have seen something that people know exists, but no one's ever really seen. It's never been put on the bootleg market. And that is a print of the van that actually has Chevy Van the Movie as its title card.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, because, of course, that's the theme song is Sammy John's Chevy Van. It was a big hit.
Theme song? That's about the only song that I can remember from that movie.
Yeah. They play it quite a bit.
They even stopped the movie for 5 minutes. People call it vanploitation. I call it van porn. If you see a car in a movie and they film it just like a porn guy would film a beautiful girl naked lying in a chair, you're watching a car porn movie.
Yes. And, that's one of the very best. And then the semi-sequel is Malibu Beach, which is more van porn. And then there's Super Van. Which has a weird cameo appearance by the writer Charles Bukowski, judging a wet T-shirt.
I know, I love showing that scene to people and not telling them what's going on. Then all of a sudden, what the fuck was that, Bukowski? You can make up a whole mythos of why the hell Bukowski was on that movie set.
Yeah, how he got there. Yeah, it's amazing, yeah. And, So yeah, vans are a big part of the action in all of the 70s movies. And then not so much. And there's Blue Summer is a great one from 73. That's one of the first.
Yeah.
Directed by Chuck Vincent, who made Preppies and Hollywood Hot Tubs and Wimps and a bunch of great other films. Summer Camp in 1979, but a really great teen sex director.
Yeah, Chuck Vincent was one of the few adult guys, one of the first adult guys to go 200% legit.
Yeah, yeah. And his movies are all really good. And his hardcore movies were really good, too. And he directed Gay and Straight Hardcore.
But you were right in the book. American Graffiti really was the start of the 70s nostalgia craze in the teen movies.
Yeah. That's sort of ground zero. And the book covers the 20 years.
I think
years.
That's the first movie I ever seen that I remember seeing.
Really? That's a great one to start
yeah.
with.
Yeah.
And there's great
well,
car
all I cared about
a
three-year-old is seeing that axle get ripped off of the back of a car.
Yeah, the cop car, yeah. And again, sets it all up. And then Charles Martin Smith, as Terry the Toad, really set the template for the nerd, as we understand what the nerd looks like in all these teen movies. He's got the Coke bottle glasses, the greaseback hair, his shirt's buttoned up to the top, his pants are pulled up too high. And he's very funny, very funny. And
when the time comes, he'll knock the holy crap out of you.
Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah. Never underestimate him.
Well, yeah, the 70s had a gentle one. About the biggest one of the 70s is the one the director said destroyed the whole cruising scene in Van Nuys. And that would be
Van
Nuys Boulevard.
Yeah.
I love
yeah,
that
with Perry
one.
King.
That was the third
yeah,
in the trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's Crown International Pictures, and it's a great film. Beautiful car porn in that one, that's for sure.
And no plot.
Right. Cruising. What's the movie about? Cruising. What do you see in it? Cruising.
Cruising, yeah. Besides that bizarre, the director has said in the commentary that the producer thought that food porn was going to be the next big thing.
Yeah.
So beware, there's this bizarre scene about 20 minutes or so in the Van Nuys Boulevard. What did you think of that infamous scene?
I didn't notice it. I got to say, I mean, it just seemed like a weird scene, but it's hilarious. I didn't know that background on it. But, yeah, it's just, you know, I mean, it just seems like, oh, this is a plotless movie. This is where they're going to eat now. So, but, yeah, that's hilarious.
And the scene where they're trying to bash the car in and none of them could do it. So he just filmed them getting exhausted. Yeah, 70s. That's my Van Nuys Boulevard sticks out. It didn't care, but it was great.
Yeah, I agree.
And there's one that I have that I understand why you didn't put it on, because it was Johnny Legend's only hardcore film.
Oh, it's in the book. I've got that in there.
Teenage Cruisers?
Yeah.
What's it under? I looked in H and I was like, I didn't see Hot and Horny Teenage Cruisers.
Oh, I listed it as Teenage Cruisers. That was the title I saw it under.
Okay.
Under it, yeah.
And if
you
go into it looking for – go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I got to see that Johnny hosted it at the Newark Theater in Los Angeles about 20 years ago, and I got to see it there.
If you watch it looking for porn, you're going to be disappointed.
Very much.
But if you watch it looking for some badass rockabilly music – you're going
to
enjoy
the
holy hell out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't gotten to the tease yet, but yeah. But yeah, Animal House was the one to really, the next step.
Yeah, that's the big bridge. That took the 60s nostalgia of American Graffiti, and it's even set in the same year, 1962. I really just pumped it up with complete outrageousness and raunch and sex and chaos and just, you know, brilliantly delivered and really rewrote comedy all over the world.
Yeah, well, let's just say I was born in 1970, and so I was 9 years old when it came out. And my mom and dad had already been letting me see Saturday Night Live. So they seen the Christmas reissue poster. It had John Belushi going down the Delta House chimney with the Santa Claus outfit on?
Yes, yes.
They're like, oh, this will be harmless.
Oh, boy. That's exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. They cover my eyes during the naughty bits, but I still got to hear the hilarious with the devil and the angel on his shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah, and that there's a scene that we wouldn't be watching today in a 2019 movie.
That's the one that everybody tried to copy, but according to his Psycho Rabbit fan base on it, there's only one film that even come near it. But yes, I love the music more in Animal House than I did the movie back then.
The music is great. It certainly is. From Louie Louie to, of course, Shout and Stephen Bishop's theme song in the tradition of the early 60s rock and roll. Just a great soundtrack.
Yeah. And one thing I noticed is when I watched Animal House as a teen, I loved these guys. I was like, yeah, they're my heroes. I want to be them. But the second I turned 30, 35, I was like, they should throw these fucking bombs out of the school.
Yeah. You definitely come at it from a different angle. A little more sympathetic to Dean Wormer. Yeah.
And plus, I didn't get how gay the frat hazing scenes were with Kevin Bacon until I was older.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yeah, thank you, sir. May I have another? Or the scene where he's in the drive-in getting a hand job, cursing out the Deltas, and then they just have one line and it says, show anything. I thought you were supposed to get hard when I do this.
That's Greg Marmalade. Yeah.
But yeah, that one led to... Well, a lot of them, but the one that has the biggest, I think, cult following of them is, I'm going to say it's real title, not the one that everyone uses, and that's King Fucking Frat.
Yeah, that is an incredible film. It's one of the craziest things you'll ever see. It's one of the, it's a ripoff of Animal House, but there's nothing like King Fucking Frat. There really isn't.
Yeah.
It's like Animal House with no rules whatsoever.
And it was X-rated, if you got to see it uncut.
Yeah, yeah, which I didn't, I don't think. But who knows? I've seen, there's so many versions of it out there.
Yeah, that's a way to tell. If it had King, doo-doo-doo, Pratt, it was the X-rated version. But if it just had King Pratt.
Yeah. Also called Campus King.
I don't think I ever watched... I watched that on cable one night, because I don't think it ever came out on VHS, did it?
Yes, it did. That's where I saw it, was on VHS, yeah.
Oh. Well, none of my video stores carried it. But I thought it was hilarious.
It certainly is.
I didn't love it as much as its rabid fan base does, but the rabid fan base is right, because I know how violent they can get.
But, it's a hell of an experience, King Frat. I recommend it to everybody.
Yeah, the early 80s was when the trilogy came out. It was like Animal House in 79, and then King Frat, and then Porky's.
Yeah. That's 82. So, yeah, those are three wild films that really broke all taboos and lit the teenage audience on fire.
Biggest problem with going back to Porky's is the first 20 minutes, that first prank is so hilarious that it's hard for the movie to top it.
With Cherry Forever, yeah. I also feel like at the end
of my the guy coming in with a machete, I'm going to kill you!
Yeah. I also feel like those guys are a bunch of brats at the end. As I got older, I was like, Porky was right. You don't let underage kids in your fucking whorehouse. Get the hell out of here. They destroy his business at the end and we're supposed to be happy for it.
Yeah. one I liked at the end. The second one I like better than the first one because it actually
it's
had
funny.
An intelligent subject to it. Yes,
yeah.
Porky's 2 has intelligence.
Yeah, dealing with censorship and Shakespeare and, yeah, religious oppression.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird how Porky's and Porky's 2 really was an honest slice of life of the 50s, like more like American Graffiti than Animal House.
Yeah. Well, that was what the director said he wanted to do, Bob Clark. He said he wanted to create the 50s as he experienced it.
I hope to God he didn't stick his wiener in a hole and have it pulled out by 300 pounds.
Well, if he did, he turned it into a great, you know, work of art and business. So it was worth it.
And Bob Clark said that the whole thing with the gym teacher and the howling, that actually happened
to
one of his spins when he was working as
an
assistant coach at a high school.
It's very believable. Yeah.
And yeah, they got him in the same way. Just take her in the sweat room, and she'll be good to go. They just didn't tell her that what she got going, she starts howling like a...
Yeah. Lassie.
But yeah, I mean, the glut of them in the early 80s was amazing. You had that spring... I remember Spring Break. When was that one?
Sure. 83. Directed by Sean S. Cunningham, who made Friday the 13th.
Yeah, Last House on the Left.
Yeah, produced that, yeah.
Sean Cunningham said that the hotel incident actually happened to him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he got a girl up to a room, and then she said, go down and get us something to drink. He's like, okay, and he ran out of the room, and by the time he was halfway down the stairs, he remembered that he didn't know what the room number was. And you don't mention the other thing that makes Spring Break an oddity that makes it stick out from all the other teen movies of the time.
What's that?
They drink Miller beer in it.
Oh, I think I do mention that. Yeah, Miller beer and Coca-Cola everywhere in that movie, yeah.
Yeah,
everywhere.
In every other film, they're usually drinking Budweiser. I think
usually
all those teen movies is why Budweiser became the king of beer in the 80s.
I think you're right.
It was like beer in 80s teen movies were like J&B Scotch and Jollos.
Yeah, very much. Parallel example.
But then VHS hit, and good God, did that slow. That's where I see 90% of them was them just put out the VHS.
Right. I
like
saw a bunch of them in the theater, but then I saw most
resort.
Of them on VHS. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. And we can't forget the scuzziest one that came out in the 80s. The one that called Howard Hessman to call it the most disgusting, sleazy piece of shit I've ever been into. Been in, don't ask me any more about this.
Private Lessons?
Private Lessons.
Yeah.
Based on an Ed McBain book. Yeah.
Yeah. It's based
on a Ed
thriller.
McBain book,
yeah.
A crime story with a 30-year-old. Well, the book is about a 30-year-old rich guy who gets seduced by a baby kidnapped.
Yeah.
They changed it a little bit for the movie, didn't they? Just a little bit.
They did. Yeah, a little tonal shift there. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of 30, he was about 13.
Yeah, I would say that's right. Yeah.
What was it with that trend with the... It started with the summer movies. Or
with,
as I call
what do you mean?
It. The 50s fantasy fuck movies.
Like what?
Summer 44 and Summer 54.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Oh, the poor woman. She's there alone. Her husband's in the war. Well, I'm almost a man here, and I'll take care of you. Oh, I love you. Let's have sex. Oh, I gotta go now. You mean I'm free from responsibility? Yes. Yes, you are.
Yeah.
All right. Hi-ho, hi-ho. It's off, so I go. I had some sex and got away with a hi-ho. And then they always got to have the ending of the 30-year-old guy still whistling happy that he got away with it.
Yeah, yeah.
But, of course,
the woman dies
of cancer or some kind of disease.
Yeah, it's just male fantasy, especially teenagers.
Yeah. Private Lessons was the one that took it to the limit. Because the boy actually looked 13. That was the biggest difference between it and the 44 films. They didn't look they didn't look their ages they're supposed to be playing. So you could write it off.
Right.
But in Private Lessons, he looked 13, and there he was doing the nastier Sylvia Kristal, and you wanted to take a shower as soon as the movie was over.
Yeah, very popular movie, though. Big hit in its day.
Yeah, I wonder why no one's picked it up to release it on DVD, though.
I think it is. I think it's on Blu-ray. I think you can get a deluxe copy of it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Howard Hess would have done a commentary on it. That would have been beautiful, just to hear him get angry about it. But, yeah, there's one which I'll get into. That this one has a very bizarre two-pronged cult following. The first one is for its amazing soundtrack. It should have been called IRS Records, the movie.
Sure. That's
pretty much every artist. What was it about teen movies able to get high-grade, great songs for pennies?
Well, they were great promotional vehicles, and they could sell a lot of records for the record company.
Oh, yeah, pre-MTV, I forgot.
Yeah. But then a lot of them made MTV videos that would promote the movie and the song.
Yeah, that's when it got. That was about 85 when that tsunami started. But before then, if you wanted to get your music heard, you'd get it on a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
This movie had this unknown band from Athens, Georgia, had just released its first album, called REM.
Right. REM, yeah.
Yeah, the Buzzcocks. Concrete Blonde in their original form.
Right.
Some of the best ska bands out there.
Yeah, that was, it's an amazing soundtrack. It's a crazy thing.
And that movie and this fan base, which I'm part of, we have a secret thing. We just say two words, and if you see them break in the face and a big smile just on those two words, you know they're us. And that's when you knew I was officially one of the cool kids, right, Mike?
You're 100%.
Yeah, and that is Pondo Sinatra.
Our hero, absolutely.
And it's weird to me because The Party Animal is one of those movies with an amazing amount of musical filler, and you don't mind.
No, you love it because it's great.
I mean, they play the whole 5-minute version of the Buzzcocks, Can You Feel It, at the first and end of the movie, and you love it.
Yes. You just want more, yeah, and it gives it to you. Yeah, crazy great soundtrack.
By the time that the producer was trying to get the soundtrack put out, a lot of those bands were signed that it was too cost prohibitive for them to put it out.
Yeah. Yeah. They just took off and that was it. Not possible.
Did you actually get to see it in the theater, or are you another one of us that found it on video?
I found that on VHS. I missed it in the theater, unfortunately. But
the
movie's
only
a happy day
minute,
when I found
it. Is, yeah. I think the way to describe the movie is just from the narration, which is great. Pando Sinatra is a guy who fell off the porno truck, turnip truck, who doesn't try to have sex. He wages war on it.
Yes, completely. It's psychotic. It's great.
And there's no real plot through line. There's just these random scenes of him trying to get laid and failing.
Yeah. And then succeeding too much. Yeah.
Yeah, then he finds his potion, super potion. I think my favorite scene of it, hilarious, is the one with the attack with the foreign exchange student.
Hilarious, yeah.
Yeah, when he breaks the cable, roses are red,
yes,
and flowers are blue, you got big titties, I want to suck on it. It's just one of those you have. It's just pure insanity.
Yeah, it's indescribable how crazy it is and how great it is. You have to experience it.
Yeah, you have to see the Moby XX1 once in your life.
Yeah. Yes.
Did you know that's the director and the producer playing the two guys along the porno shop doing the bizarre Marlon Brando impersonation?
No, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, the director is the one that does the whole thing, the whole nuclear missiles using dildos thing.
Yeah, right. That's amazing.
Yeah. You don't want the Moby. I want the Moby. It's one of those, if you like bizarre teen comedies, that's one of the must-sees.
Oh, yeah. It might be the most bizarre. It's the best.
Yeah. And another problem with them is around 84 and 85, the major studios started making them.
Yes. Yeah. Never as much fun when that happens.
Well, except for maybe Risky Business.
That's a great film, yeah. Great film.
Even me and my ex-co-host, Carl, we always fight about which ending would have been better, because they did three. There's the one you see in the movie.
Yes.
And the second one just ends when he puts his sunglasses on before the whole his dad coming out with the "you succeeded."
Right.
And the third one's an Italian novel, which I love. It ends with him talking to Guido, the killer pimp.
Oh.
Guido looks at him and goes, "Are you mad at me? Mad at me? Shit, you taught me more about business and economics than a whole year of that school."
That's
right,
true.
Kid. But instead, they used the same date footage from earlier in the movie, which I never understood why.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it?
I read somewhere, I don't know if it's true or not, that they wanted to have a happy ending. They didn't want to make it look like she used him, which he did.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, that does, they believe that sells tickets, but, you know, some of them haven't have the nerve to try other things.
And plus, I think it was a hit before, but nothing. But Tom Cruise and his Tidy Whiteys made old-time rock and roll into a classic.
Instantly. Right away. Yeah.
But yeah, that one was great, I think. My mind's locked. But there was the Screwballs, the ones that Roger Corman had. Those, I'm surprised, didn't get a Screwballs, I'm shocked, didn't get an X rating.
Very raunchy, very, very crazy, very cartoonish, very, very funny. Screwballs in the sequel, Loose Screws.
The scene with the, our hero and the freaking person, the freaking, the rich girl's mother. There's a couple
yes.
of shots there that go beyond R-rated when she's performing a certain act on him.
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's pretty close. It's impressive.
And it has Lynn Shay's screen debut.
Very much, yes, beautifully done.
How does it feel knowing that the girl, the woman that you think of, this sweet old woman from The Conjuring, was slamming her boobies up against a van door for 5 minutes for no reason during Screwballs while little boys were shooting squirt gun at her boobs?
At the drive-in, yeah, which is hilarious, yeah.
That's art, isn't it?
The highest form.
Oh, and I want to ask, were you as pissed off as I was the year that Roger Corman was not allowed to be on the Oscars?
Of course.
But,
it was a complete outrage.
Oh, I ain't finished. But they spent 10 minutes on that piece of shit, talentless hack, John Hughes.
Yeah, and had the kids come out. I don't care for John Hughes at all. So, yeah,
no.
It was annoying to me. I didn't care for it.
Why has he done that deserved Oscar acclaim?
Well, I mean, people do love his movies. I'm not one of them. And, you know, it's the Oscars. Who cares? You know, I mean, I'm not interested
in those
Oscar movies.
Yeah, but I've always, like I said, you know how I would have done Roger Corman?
Yeah.
I would have had Ron Howard, Jonathan Demme, almost every
sure.
best win Oscar
Scorsese,
winner.
Scorsese, Coppola,
and there,
Jack
walk
Nicholson.
Walk out with their Oscars and just stand there and just have them go out there and go, I did that.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're completely right. That's brilliant.
But yeah, I never. Only one of his pretty much liked decently was Weird Science.
It's funny. That's the funny one for sure.
Yeah, even though they cut it for VHS, and it still leaves out my favorite part. Damn it.
Which is what?
The blues bar scene.
Oh yeah. They cut that on VHS?
Did you kick her in the family jewels? Yeah, man, she kicked me in them balls, man. Did you cut her? I would have cut her. For some reason, they thought that was too violent, and they cut it out for the home version.
Oh, that's terrible, because I remember that very well. I saw it in the theater.
But, yeah, I mean, when John Waters took over the teen movies, they really got homogenized.
I agree. They just they became like Disney movies and just ran out of gas.
Well, I do agree with you about Ferris Bueller, too. He's a deranged psychotic.
I hate
who everyone
him.
Thinks
yeah.
is the greatest person in the world.
Yeah, I thought he was obnoxious. I couldn't stand him.
That would have been a beautiful ending if he did catch him.
Yeah. Yeah. They killed him.
But, yeah, during the late 80s, we'd have to stay home because I think VHS is the one that you call the best of the teen, one of the best of the teen movies was, and that's Hard Bodies.
Oh, yeah, it's a crazy film. I love it.
I think,
fun
well,
theme song.
I remember it came
yeah.
to my local theater, but during the mid-80s, it was basically just an indoor sleaze drive-in with a freaking
right.
pool table in the middle of the lobby and a ski ball
that's cool.
at the other end. And they didn't give a good goddamn if you switched theaters in the middle or what.
That's awesome. Man, that sounds great.
Yeah. They got all that stuff like Hard Bodies and things like that. Oh, I've seen a double feature of Going All the Way, the one with the video cameras.
I remember that, sure.
And Space Raiders, the bizarre Star Wars ripoff
with
the little boy drinking beer.
That's right. That's right. Space Raiders.
Yeah, I got to see them as a double feature. The only teenage nudity movie with no nudity in it. Where Joe Bob said that those titties were so small that when they took off their tops, they really shouldn't count.
That's the truth. May as well have been their backs, yeah.
Oh, I haven't got to that part of the book yet. What did you think of Meatballs and Meatballs 2?
I love them all. I love all four Meatballs movies in their own way. There's four total.
The third one's crazy.
The third one's rated R. It's nuts.
The third one, that was a bizarre plot. A famous star dies and she has to get this boy laid if she won't get to heaven.
Yeah, porn star. By Sally Kellerman.
Didn't they make like a TV show with Audrey Landry with the same premise about a year later?
I don't know, but that sounds familiar.
But Meatballs 4, I didn't like just because it was right when Corey Feldman had graduated into his sleazy 20-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. That's the ultimate sleazy Corey Feldman movie.
Yeah. But yeah, Summer, that was always the main one. There was college, the big party, and
summer camp. Yeah, yeah.
And I can't enjoy The Revenge of the Nerds anymore after seeing American Splendor. Have you seen that movie?
Yes, yeah, I'm familiar with American Splendor, yeah.
Don't you agree with what Martin Picard said about Revenge of the Nerds?
Yeah, he really took it down a peg, that's for sure. Accurately, I think.
It's true. These are rich people. You know the people that are picking on them now? They will fucking own them and be their bosses in 10 years. They are not you. And that's what now didn't even bring up that Revenge of the Nerds is probably the rapiest of the teen movies.
It really is. It's really shocking now when you watch it. It's you can't believe that, you know, we didn't really nobody really thought much about it at the time.
Yeah, that's because all I was always thinking about was naked girls.
Exactly. Yeah, we got Bush, as Booger says.
Yeah. And we didn't even think twice about the whole thing in the haunted house.
Right, right, where he disguises himself, yeah.
Yeah, and he made her come. She liked it. It's all right. But, yeah, I'm amazed you put Cheerleader Camp in there. Only thing I really liked about Cheerleader Camp was the guy that played the cook. He was in They Live, too.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Because he was just a creepy guy. I hope you die and they gut you like a pig. What the hell? That movie may be one of the most ultimate what the hell movies, because every 5 minutes something happens to make you jump back and go, what the hell? Like she catches a boyfriend screwing around and it cuts to the dream.
Yes.
Where they're cheering at him going, fuck her hard, way hard, what the?
That is a head scratcher for sure, yeah.
Especially with the ending.
Yes. Well, I don't want to. No spoiler alerts.
Yeah. Well, I ain't going to talk about it. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
did you think the first run of the teen movie, the 80s, things really started to dry up?
I think in around 1987 with the last John Hughes movie, Some Kind of Wonderful, and I think it ended because teenage boys could just get hardcore pornography on VHS. It was just easy. So there was, you know,
Yeah. That's
who the movies was for, and there was no reason. You couldn't get them excited about, 10 seconds in a locker room.
Well, the ones that would think about, oh, I watched all those movies on USA's Up All Night. I'm like, so?
Yeah.
To me, watching one of those movies on Up All Night is like getting a hamburger and just having the bun and being glad that you just got the bun.
I agree totally. But people tell me that they would see the movies on there and then they'd go out and rent the R-rated version.
Yeah, let's be honest. 90% of Rhonda Shear's fans were foot fetishes.
That's true. That's a big part of that audience for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, do you remember what she got busted for about 92, 93?
No, not at all.
Gerbil videos.
Gerbil videos? This I never heard. Wow.
Yeah. Where she was, it was basically crushing videos where she would take her long legs and stuff and pantyhose and high-heeled sexy shoes and crush cakes. And there was one gerbil video that it was faked, but it was enough to get her into deep shit.
Really? Wow. Well, I'm glad it was
fake. But, yeah, people remember, it's like Joe Bob. Everyone remembers Monster Vision. I'm like, screw Monster Vision. I loved him back when he was on the Boomy Channel.
That's right. Is that where he started out? That was right. Yeah. Show the
complete movie,
uncut, no commercials. Yeah.
Yeah, you got the weird ones toward the end, like jocks, preppies.
Yeah.
School spirit. I like that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Invisible kid. Yeah.
Guy gets killed going for a dildo. I mean, going for a condom.
That's right. Then he gets to haunt the girls' locker room.
Yeah. And James Cokel was in a lot of the last ones.
No, he's in Hunk, yeah.
Yeah, Hunk. I think he was in School Spirit as the leading guys there.
Oh, maybe, yeah. I can't remember right now.
But yeah, the Crown movies at the last. My Chauffeur is a classic. That one's one that needs to get more love than it does.
Yeah, it does seem to have kind of fallen through the cracks. It was a big popular movie.
It was just hilarious, and it was the first movie appearance of Penn and Teller.
That's right, yeah. They play, Teller plays the oil sheik. That's right.
Yeah, and Penn pays the guy that rips them off. And my tutor
right.
has one of my favorite lines ever.
What's that?
I know kung fu. Oh, yeah, I know kung fu, motherfucker. Pulls out the freaking magnet.
That's perfect.
And for all the sleaze we're talking about, people would be shocked how innocent those movies really were in the end.
Very much, yeah. And that's just the evidence of the different times.
Because no matter what, usually the good girl and the good boy would end up together and they would all end up in monogamous relationships.
Yep. Big romantic happy ending.
Yeah. Unless you're Johnny Depp and then you get picked up by this bizarre girl doing a Hindu talk.
Oh, that's right. That's hilarious. In Private Resort, yeah.
That's one that I don't even think it's on Johnny Depp's IMDb.
I'd be surprised if it's not, but I don't know. I'll have to check.
Because there's a lot of big stars that were in those that were just embarrassed to be in them.
That's true. And they never thought they'd be around 20, 30 years later. And here we are.
Yeah. Or that people remember them. They're like, oh, they're going to video. They'll be forgotten. Yeah, right.
Right. Yes.
What was the hardest part about putting this book together? I mean, tracking down some of the films?
Watching them and writing a review for all the different movies. You know, there's like 300, there's more than 300 reviews in there. So it's just very time consuming. And that way it was tough, but it was great fun too. But, you know, making sure I had everything that I thought belonged in there. I found almost everything, almost everything. There's one movie I couldn't find called Young Lust, which may not exist at all physically anywhere, but I found the poster for it. I put that in the book.
Yeah.
But that was tough watching all of them. It's just very time consuming and trying to be, you know, trying to write a good review for each one. You know,
especially since a lot of them probably blended in together.
Oh, very much. Yeah. Yeah.
Like you could tell a Crown International one from Roger Corman one.
Yeah, Corman, for sure. Yeah, Crown had their own style, their own look. There's definitely a Southern California kind of just sun-bleached, kind of laid-back air to them, even the crazier ones.
Yeah. I think the only one of the 80s that have aged truly horribly is probably the Troma ones.
Troma's the worst. I hate Troma. And their teen movies are as bad as their other movies, so I don't care.
Yeah, Squeeze Play, The First Turn On.
First Turn On, yeah. Waitress.
The only thing interesting about The First Turn On is it has Vincent D'Onofrio in it.
Yeah, he's there, yeah.
What I love about Troma is they make crappy movies and try to say, oh, we did this on purpose. We get the joke.
Right.
Wink, wink, wink.
I hate it. Yeah, I hate that. It's like, yeah, that's so cowardly and untrue. You couldn't make a good movie, Troma.
But you did, or was Hot T-Shirts a pickup by them?
That's a Chuck Vincent film. That's a, they pick up some good movies, that's for sure.
Yeah. They have one of the best pickup libraries I know. But, yeah, I've never seen Hot T-Shirts. I've only seen the trailer on the 42nd Street Forever edition that it's on.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I like that movie.
He just looks so innocent. I mean, they're talking about, oh, I've got the dirtiest idea they'll bring men in. What? Wet T-shirt contest.
Yeah, that's going to save the disco business, yeah. And it does.
Well, in all of those, they come up with these crazy ideas at work. Like, hey, the 90s was the one of the job era.
Yeah.
Bikini car wash, bikini tour guide.
All of the bikinis,
I think they did about everything in bikini. I was surprised if there's one out there called Bikini Pizza Parlor.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track of how many of those they made. Because those really have no plot.
No. It's like, hey, we're going to run around in bikinis and act like we're naked. And you're going to like it. And I'm like, no, but that little dude about 12 will.
Right, that's for sure. For the rest of his life.
Unless we let him see our Andy Sedaris films, but that's a different story.
Wow. That's a big leap up, yeah.
Yeah. Not only do you get boobies, you get a killer cobra.
All right. Well, I think I got to get rolling here.
Yeah, okay. Well, then we'll call it a night. Here, I've got right here everyone's name who pretty much entered in here. Okay. Take the lid off. Hold on. And It's drawn, and the winner is... I folded it too good. Number four, and that would be... Simon Magus.
All right,
only...
Simon Magus. Good dude.
Okay, I'll be getting in touch with you to get the book. But get
awesome.
The book to you as soon as I can. It's going to be a little extra, too. It's going to have from my friends at Central Cinema. I'm giving them a beer koozie and a sticker from the little theater.
Awesome. Well, thank
and
you so much.
And because I just have it laying
fun.
Around because I was going to do a watch, but I never did get to it. I'm going to give him a copy of The Company of Wolves because I got three of them because
oh,
I was
cool.
going to do a watch,
awesome.
But my other two co-conspirators bailed out.
Oh, good movie, though.
So, yeah, everybody, really, if you love the 80s like you say you do, get that book. You'll love it.
Thank you. Teen Movie Hell. Yeah. Get it at Amazon.
Yeah. What do you have coming in the future? Do you have another thing in the plans that
this
book stands out?
I'm going to work on promoting this book for about a year and then figure that out after that.
Okay. Yeah, everyone, buy the book. It's good. And
thank you very much.
Much.
Oh, okay, good night. Thanks.
Good night, everybody. And with that, I'm calling it an early night tonight. Only going to do an hour. Why? Because we're through. And don't forget, everybody, we'll be back soon with other new shows. Thank you for watching, and thank you to the people who entered it. And with that, good night, and we'll go out the same way we came in. Okay, good night, everybody. Losers every time.